Hello and welcome to the Derm Health Co podcast. I'm Marnie, your host, and today I'm speaking with not one, but two very special guests, Sophie Lucas and Jess Goldenberg, the founders of Home of Aesthetics. Jess and Sophie share how their almost three decades of combined industry experience has seen momentous changes in the way that people are retailing and the need to bring these changes into the wholesale marketplace for the professional beauty industry. They do this through their new platform, Home of Aesthetics, and we discuss how emerging brands can position themselves when starting their wholesale journey and the challenges and insights they faced when they were bringing their vision to life. I started by asking them what they thought was the biggest misconception about the current landscape of retailing in the Australian beauty and aesthetics industry. Hello, this is Marnina from Derm Health Co and Digital Health Co. And today I have Jess and Sophie from HOA. Would you both like to just do a little bit of an introduction so that we know who's speaking for the rest of the podcast episode?
Sure. So my name is Jess and I am one of the co-founders of Home of Aesthetics.
And I am Sophie and I am obviously the other co-founder of Home of Aesthetics.
So what do you think is the biggest misconception about the current landscape of retailing in the Australian beauty and aesthetic industry?
I mean, these are all great questions, really, having seen them before, but they are just, honestly, this one is the most interesting because it's never ending. There are big misconceptions, right? And I think it really starts, the very first point is the lack of mindset that they are restricted to their current offering.
The business owners.
So when we're looking at the way that we retail in the industry at the moment, I think we're seeing something that looks very similar. Like we're looking at a lot of, you know, businesses that might hold one or two cosmeceutical ranges, and obviously that's part of the at-home treatments which we need our clients to do to make sure we reach and get to the skin changes that we're after. But and that's kind of like replicated over and over and over, which is perfect. We obviously need that, but that isn't the only thing that you can actually retail in your business. And I think that something like diversifying your existing retailing opportunities is something that we haven't necessarily been doing very well, but is something that we can do and something that we should be looking at doing now.
And the business owners, they need to be thinking outside the box. They should be knowing their brand and their business inside out, knowing what their clients want, what their clients need, and in that being able to offer more than just skincare, whether it be, you know, internal supplements or at-home LED face devices. I think it's also important to talk about what their business is. Is it a more traditional beauty? Is it with, you know, spray tan nails? The more traditional, or is it more skin focused? And that's where they need to be quite aware with what they're offering and then make sure they're ticking those boxes so they've got that diversification, like Jess said, and more to offer.
And it's like, is this sense of, is it loyalty to certain brands, or is it simply because they don't realize that there's other brands out there? Like there's so many questions in this alone, right?
Yeah, 100%. That's sort of, yeah, my thought process before is that the misconception is vast, because it's not just a misconception about what we see. It's actually, it can even come down to the individual's internal values. Oh, I'm really nervous to retail and therefore I'm not comfortable to retail and therefore I'm not retailing. But in actual fact, you know, they're missing opportunities. And having like various complementary products and or ranges, you know, brands in clinic and salon, you know, at their home might actually be an easier sell for them because it's something that they really enjoy themselves as well, you know. So I think it can really, you've got to think out of the box, and retailing at the moment I think is really, I mean, it's always been important, but it's even more important now when some of the big ticket skin treatments aren't necessarily being booked as much post-COVID, for example, and where, you know, might be looking at smaller treatments that we need to get more bang for our buck with, you know.
And I think as well as when a lot of these business owners are graduating from their beauty schools and their tapes and things like that. I know when I studied, we didn't deep dive into what you could give your clients or what your business would look like. So in the sense of we ticked the box that we learned the treatments, we could perform the treatments, and we learned, you know, the basics of skincare, when we're actually out in the big bad world, it's trying to understand what the client wants. Is something that you really don't cover at school. It's quite tunnel vision. So I feel like they need a platform like HOA, for example, where they can see a magnitude of products from LED masks to different nail polishes or whatever it may be, and then add that in. It's not just one mainstream of skincare that is the retail. And I think it's really important that they bring more in and expand with what they've got.
Yeah, great points. And we're going to be getting into so many nitty gritties within this. I've got lots of questions, but I think it's going to come up as we continue. Let's talk more about the transition to online retailing impacted the traditional beauty and aesthetics industry in Australia. Like, how have you seen that that's changed? Obvious one's COVID, but like there's a lot to it.
Yeah, this is a really big one because, I mean, we as an industry, we kind of hate online stuff, really. Like that initially, that feeling of, oh, products being sold online, and you start to think, no, this isn't what we're about. We want people in front of us. We want to see skin. We want to analyze. We want to correctly prescribe, for example. So it does have a lot of negatives to it, but there are also a lot of positives in this situation. And we can unpack both a little bit here, but look, maybe we should start with the positive.
The positive. So, I mean,
let's go with the happy thing.
Glasses half full. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's start with that, which is, like, let's be honest, the online retailing has really opened up the opportunity for everyone to be able to have accessible skincare, for example. Anyone can get involved in, you know, being able to actually increase, if your brand increased your reach, increase the amount of people that can see your brand and use your brand. And the other perspective is more people can actually start to, if they can't afford to go in clinic and do treatments or pay for a skin consultation, can actually get, you know, hopefully an appropriate level of skincare that's not going to be too harmful for them. And I know I'm starting to go into the negative a little bit here, but you know what I'm trying to say. Like it's allowing it more accessible skincare, which is, you know, really
and convenience. Convenience as well.
Yeah.
Which is a big one, I think, for a lot of
when you can.
Yeah.
You know, you might be at home 10 o'clock at night being able to go, oh, I really need that moisturizer. I could just jump on and buy it now.
Yeah. And I think that is another positive off that is a lot of businesses now will have Shopify accounts or stores that they retail, and it just chips away at the back end. It's just another, you know, avenue of revenue for them.
Which has been great since COVID.
Which has been amazing since COVID. And we've had to pivot in 1,000,000,000 different ways, right, because of COVID. And I know when I was a BDM in the middle of COVID, one of the first things we would say is you have the opportunity to make extra cash on the side because you're not trading. So you need to pivot. And we very much encouraged businesses to go down that route and create a platform where they could retail because there wasn't a lot of other ways they could do it. In saying that, there's obviously a bit of a negative mindset in general around online retail and online products. A lot of business owners may steer away from bringing through certain ranges if they are sold online. And you can look at that in two different ways. You can look at it as, you know, the business owners will say, oh, they come to me and then I do an hour consultation, they go online and then they purchase and I've lost that sale. I look at it completely differently. I look at it as, why did your client leave without the prescription that you gave them? That comes down to education. And that's where obviously the brands need to step in. But on the other side of that is influencers, which is another whole different situation where...
We're about to open up the influencer.
Yeah, here we go. Here we go.
Oh my God.
This is just sort it out.
Like so, people that know nothing about skin online telling people to get these products and things. No, those products are not appropriate for everyone. Everyone's skin concerns are different. And this is, take a deep breath right now.
Yeah, it's hard because we are constantly seeing their scrolling. We're constantly seeing influencers selling product that they don't know what they're talking about, and consumers, if they're a massive fan of these influencers, they're going to do whatever they say. So they might go to a clinic and have regular treatments, but if, I'm not going to name any names, say, but a big influencer started selling, you know, a range, they're going back that way. And that's a big frustration, I think, within the industry, and a bit of a negative.
Well, if you look at the initial question of the transition to online retailing impacting traditional beauty, it's that it's potentially taking the responsibility that we as health, as industry professionals, skin professionals, know and have learned and invested in knowledge about skin and prescribing the right things away from clinics and putting it into the retail space, where a lot of misinformation is out there. People like the influencers are recommending things that are not good for people. And so it's really changed the landscape significantly. And we did say some positives, and there is the negatives in there too. And I think we are in the middle of trying to figure out the balancing point at the moment with it all.
I agree. It's like a pendulum, right? And the pendulum might swing too far at one point where everyone was kind of following the influencers, and maybe someone's been burnt by that because that skincare has caused an adverse reaction, or it didn't do what it was said it was going to do. So inevitably we do see the pendulum swing back, but I think we have to have trust that it always does.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, definitely. I agree. I think that, you know, the problem is that we haven't necessarily seen the consequences of this, particularly the influencer side of things to skin, because the harmful things are being done now, and then in the future we're going to see what effects have been on the skin. For example, you know, most recently with the young kids and the drunk elephant side of things, and then, you know, 18-year-olds are trying to buy a really harsh retinol sort of moisturizers or serums, and because they were told to do it, and you know, it's just we haven't yet seen the consequences of that particular trend and craze. So we may, that pendulum might run, you know, come back, and we get all of those people in clinic again where they were supposed to be to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. And when we're talking about the business owners, what are some of those common barriers that businesses face when trying to establish wholesale accounts in the sector?
I think they're up against some big players. We have some incredibly established businesses, and they're coming into an industry that is saturated. And I think that's where it gets tricky for them, because how will they get their brand out there? How is their brand going to be known? And the very first thing is they'll go social media, because there's no other platform. And it's still brands, the little guys are still getting lost in the system, because the big players are always going to be front of mind. So I think that's a massive barrier for a business, is trying to get their brand out there and have space for that brand.
Yeah, absolutely. And then on the flip side, for clinic owners, what are some of those barriers that they face?
In purchasing new wholesale?
For a new clinic, or maybe it's a home salon, or someone new to the industry, what are some of these barriers that you're seeing or you're hearing in the industry that people are experiencing? And for those listening, you've probably got a whole list of things that, you know, pain points that you've experienced yourself. So,
well, I think one of the biggest things, particularly if you're, you're not a really large clinic, and you may not have a lot of, disposable income, is that when you're looking at a new brand coming through, the opening orders, just simply trying to get an opening order across the line, they could be really high opening order values, and that restricts you from bringing on a new brand that might be perfect for your clinic or your salon, or your at-home space. So that often can be quite a big barrier, I think, is the initial opening orders. I also do think that what we have seen, and you know, not to take it back to home of aesthetics all of the time, but there has been a big lack of research capabilities to be able to compare brands based on your unique business proposition. So let's just say, you know, you hold sustainability as a really high point. You also would only like vegan, Melbourne-based products. Like, there's no real way of being able to compare brands at the moment with these filters and be able to research them. So, you know, that could be a really big barrier as well, is this visibility on brands that could actually be perfect for you.
It's a good point.
So interesting. Like, I was just coming back to like other industries, and I'm thinking when I'm looking for a new this, like I'm looking at name stamps at the moment for children's clothes for Olive's daycare. And so what do? You go to Google, right? Yeah. And then I'm remarketed this, whatever this brand was. So I just went with that because it was like, well, I got remarketing when I logged into Instagram or Facebook the next time. Yeah. But not all of these wholesale accounts are savvy enough, or they have the budget to do that. So it's like not necessarily an even playing field either. You can be looking for a sustainable product online and go to Google, or maybe go to Facebook and ask some people, but it's going to generally be those people with the bigger budgets. It's going to be those people that are a bit more savvy with marketing or have a whole marketing department that is then going to be front of mind.
Yeah, 100%. And that's the biggest thing about, you know, being a potentially a new product coming into the industry. It's that the saturation from the bigger guys is so there, you know, in every aspect, like you mentioned, in the ability to have their own marketing teams and their budgets alone. And so, yeah, that the lack of ability for the particular brand, like the smaller brand, to hold space in this huge, huge saturated market is super difficult, and that in turn is meaning that actual stockists are missing out of the opportunities to stock that brand because they're just not being past all of the remarketing that you might get from the existing really big brands.
Yeah, absolutely. So when it comes back to, again, like the business owner, so we're looking at the clinics, the salons, and customer data and analytics, how do you see this role of having this data and these analytics in shaping retail strategies for businesses? Do you have any best practices for leveraging this? Because I think as a therapist, then turned business owner, you're not necessarily taught to look at strategy or data and then make informed decisions for your business.
Jess and I were talking about this actually this morning, and that was literally what we were saying. You leave beauty school, and it's nothing obviously against beauty schools, but you don't have the ability to really understand your brand or what where you want to go with it. And this, when we talk about customer data and analytics, it's something that is, we think, hasn't really been tapped into yet. We don't think that business owners understand how powerful this would be to utilize within their business. I feel like a lot of business owners are using their, you know, their KPIs and their targets and things based off a few things, spend per visit, you know, rebooking rate, things like that. But there's the ability to see so much more from behaviors and trends, personalized experiences, all these things that can drive business growth, and it's not been utilized yet.
Yeah, like how many owners do you know that have deep dove into their, you know, their customer analytics? Can you think off the top of your head? I personally can't.
No. And there's so much they can do from, you know, understanding customer preferences, tailor their experiences, inventory control even. The list is endless, but it's just not something that's taught, and it's also not something that I have found that someone can basically coach or train you through it. I just think it's a whole area that needs to be brought to light.
That's
really
the thing. It's not anyone's fault that they haven't been doing it. It's just that we are living in this new world of endless feedback loops, right? Mm-hmm. Not necessarily tapping into the things that we should to better our business because we are busy doing all of the other things that we might need to do for our business as well. But in actual fact, this is probably something that does require some time and space in order to better understand your customer journey and how to, you know, increase that and tenfold and make it, you know, that they're spending, you know, you do increase their spend.
An interesting concept. It's like two things I identified with that is that, one, they don't know what KPIs could be really valuable to look at because from your accountant's perspective, it's like profit loss, you know, overheads, those types of things. So that's number one. And number two is there's no systems in place to then like at how frequently do you look at this and what is the system? What is the actual steps to identify how to find this data as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's it's a shame at the moment that there hasn't been space for this. I think it will. I think obviously we know what the industry is doing. We know which way it's going. So at some point this will be more available and we know that more business owners will utilize this. But at the moment it's this like hidden gem that no one knows about and they should. They really should and they should be utilizing it.
And like this would be a whole different whole nother topic of conversation on the technology and how to gather that data. But for those that may not be comfortable gathering data, comfortable interpreting the data right now, maybe it's not about interpreting right now, but just start gathering it because in 3, 6, 12 months, if you've got data or if you know that your inventory management is really on point and that's tracked, then in the future you can have someone that helps you then analyze that. So start tracking as early as you can, whether that be through your booking software or through your online shop or cookies or whatever that is.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and with that, it's all sitting there, but that data can be captured. So
let's get into like the wholesalers and brands in general. What are some of the common challenges that you see for product distribution for the beauty and aesthetics business? We've talked a little bit about, so someone might not have a bigger marketing budget, but what are some other things that you're seeing?
We spoke about this as well, and it's a few things in terms of advice that we would say to be front of mind and paramount would be focus on quality products and really building strong relationships, because this industry, as big as it is, it's very small. And if you know someone that knows someone that knows someone, that's where your connection, your networking is absolutely paramount to get your brand out there. If you sit back and hope someone sees it on Instagram, you're really not going to make much traction. So we think building strong relationships with suppliers as well. Obviously, an appealing and consistent brand image. You want to launch properly and know your voice and know your branding and know exactly who you are. I think that's a big one. And that's one that Jess and I spoke about at length before we launched Home of Aesthetics. We both decided we would design our own logo and try and make our own website page, and we sat there and we both hated everything that we had done. So we actually engage with people that's their, you know, it's their genius zone. So I think you need to get it right to begin with. You don't want to get lost within the market because it's already too big. So another big one is obviously prioritizing your customer service. You need to be accessible at all times, get back to your social media questions or your inbox or whatever it may be. But you need a strong presence, and to do that, you need to be working 24/7, really. No, not really. But you do need to be switched on, and you do need to have clear direction with what you want to do.
Yeah, and I do, and I completely agree in terms of the direction, and like something to, you know, lean in on that a little bit about also really focusing on your why, because your why is your story, and people don't like. People aren't necessarily going to purchase straight away. They need to learn more about you. They need to trust your brand and what you're offering is going to achieve the things that they're after. So if you focus on that why, you're going to bring people into that story, and they're going to trust, and then they're going to purchase. I think that's really important, and that's often your unique selling point as well. That's the thing that's going to differentiate you from, you know, the very well-established, saturated big brands out there at the moment. So that's your, you know, the point of difference for you is really, really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And that kind of ties into this next question around something that everyone's kind of thinking about or seeing in the industry, and that is the importance of sustainability and ethical practices because, you know, of the cancel culture, because people are becoming more aware of best practices. Mm. So what are some things that you're seeing in the beauty retailing and wholesaling space that you think is really important for sustainability and ethical practices?
I mean, like, well, we not only in this industry, we're seeing a huge shift in sustainability searches, even online, for example, in every industry, in every aspect. So I think, and then there's also really, like, I listened to a podcast of my own not too long ago of, like, not my own, but another beauty business that were going through a complete rebranding based on sustainability being their biggest value. Mm-hmm. So you can actually see that that is something that is really, really at the top of people's minds at the moment, yeah. and will absolutely not only help propel your brand forward, but also keeps you to a level of standard that we don't accept anything less than that now as a society. So I think that in terms of, like, sustainability side of things, that you should have that first, and, you know, you should have that in the forefront of your mind when you are looking at your business, because not if you're establishing a new business, but also these huge mm-hmm. businesses that, or companies that have been around for years and years and years of rebranding based on that alone. So it is super, super important. And then, you know, like, in terms of the ethical side of things, being super transparent. I don't like when I see a brand saying vegan friendly, because that means that you are using animal products at times. Vegan friendly means that you are not vegan.
Not certified vegan. Yeah.
So we should say, you know, vegan friendly equals not vegan, essentially. So I think we have to be really mindful of,
it's a bit blurry, isn't it?
Of what the ethical lines are. Don't be blurry. And I know marketing is blurry and that's the whole purpose, but I don't want to, I'm not about tricking people into purchasing. I think, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think just be really, really clear on what you're, where you're sitting within that.
And we're seeing a lot more brands, even the very well-known established brands, shifting and changing, whether it's their packaging or they're, you know, looking more at carbon offset and things like that. We've got brands now that have reusable packaging where you can, you know, fill up products and go back home. So it's been a really positive change, and I think we're just going to get better and better.
Yeah.
I think also the members or the clients that are purchasing from our business owners are very conscious of what they're buying. So I think it's really important to highlight, as a business owner, you need to know what you're stocking inside and out. Mm. And I mean, whether, like Jess said, it's vegan friendly or certified vegan or, you know, I know there's a bit of a blurry area if it's Australian made or Australian owned or one or the other. That's never clear, let's be honest. No. The brands are never clear with where it's coming from. It might be owned in Australia, but it's made elsewhere. So if someone as a business owner is determined to have, you know, Australian made, Australian owned, really do that research to establish what this brand is about, to make sure you're giving your clients the right information.
Yeah, like, informed decisions.
Yeah.
Don't, like, try and trick them.
Yeah.
And if it is something that you want to do, and I'm going to put it back onto the brands a little bit, like, we love you, brands, don't get me wrong, but if you want to say vegan on there, then make yourself vegan. I put the challenge back onto you.
There's this saying that I heard the other day and it just comes to mind, and that is, lies have speed but truth has stamina.
Yeah.
Mm. And yeah, it's like, you can trick someone, you know, maybe at the beginning, but ultimately it's going to come back. It's going to be called out or something. So it starts with intention, right? Like,
yes.
If you know, maybe there's been a sense of naivety or something in the past, but as soon as a brand knows better or a business knows better, do better.
Yeah.
Yes.
Definitely. That, absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's, you know, the benefit of what we're doing in terms of our own values sitting behind our, you know, our marketplace and our business of HOA, which is just that we are enabling the proper information to be placed in front of the member or the, you know, the clinic.
It's factual with us. It's not blurry.
So it makes the right decision.
Yeah.
That is right for them and their business.
So in the partnership of a salon or a clinic owner, there's obviously the clinic owner and then there's the wholesaler, but then we can't forget about the customer. So let's talk about the customer. What role does the customer experience play in building a successful retail or wholesale beauty brand?
It's everything.
Yeah.
User
experience. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's paramount because their perception is your reality. Like what, how they are perceiving your product, your brand, your look and feel, your general energy is the reality of what your brand is, right? Because that's how it works.
Yep.
So if you can create a, you know, a beautiful, seamless user experience that is just, you know, they're on board with your journey, they are, and you're wise, they understand it, they trust you, it's all just going to be positive at the end, and they're going to keep purchasing and they're going to keep re-engaging with you, and they're going to give like the most amazing you know, references to your word of mouth.
What's that saying? Everyone wants to know. Yeah. You have a bad experience, you tell like 13 people or something, you have one good experience, you only tell three. I think it's something like that. Don't quote me on it, but it's around those numbers. And that is huge. That would make huge waves if you're a new business trying to break through and have space in this industry and your customer experience isn't up to where it needs to be, and that one person tells 13 other people, what hope do you have? And you need to get on top of it to begin with. And I think it's literally one of the most important parts of launching a business is the way that you interact and how you're perceived. Exactly.
It's a big responsibility, isn't it?
Huge. Oh, yeah. And you've always got to be on, don't you? There could be a negative review and you've got to write back and say, you know, I'm sorry you went through this or whatever, thinking, oh, I don't know if they are.
And no one really sets out to be like, yeah, I'm going to give this customer a really crap service.
No.
And yeah, it's going to be like really terrible. Like that's, you know, never going to be what people actually are intending to do. Everyone wants to deliver a fantastic product, brand, service. But it's really making sure that you
walk the walk.
You walk the walk.
Talk the talk.
And you take feedback as well and adjust as you see, as it needs to be, you know. Because again,
I've always thought that business is very much a personal development process. And it really is, because you have to be able to be truthful with yourself about what your customers are saying about you, about your services, about your team. It's a hard pill to swallow sometimes, but certainly it's rewarding if you can get it right.
And it's an opportunity. Every bit of feedback,
that's right.
You've got to flip it. It might not be positive, it might be horrible to read, but someone has experienced your service in a certain way. Whether or not you agree, it doesn't matter. You need to have that opportunity to change or adapt, and that's on you to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, in every bad review or in any feedback that may not come to, you know, like, you know, all the bells and like all of the fantastic things that you do, all of the negative side of things is really offering a way to make it better as well.
So. Yeah. Yeah. It's actually just an opportunity to see something in a different lens, make it, better. So let's get into a little bit more about HOA. I would love for you to share the journey, the inspiration behind creating Home of Aesthetics, and how you see that it's really revolutionising the Australian beauty industry.
It's a big one. It's been in the works now nearly a year. It'll be nearly a year to the day that we first had this idea. Well, Jess came to me with this idea, and it's obviously evolved tenfold since we started the discussion. So I think in terms of revolutionizing the industry, this hasn't been done before. This is the first of its kind, and we often discuss how the industry is constantly evolving in the sense of products and devices and you know, back end, things like that. But when it comes to customers or
the business side of things,
there's just nothing that's moving forward. And we often think, how on earth has no one done this yet? It makes no sense, because business owners are still going down two avenues or two channels to find out some reviews or information about brands before they commit, whether it's Facebook community groups or they're Googling. There's nowhere else they can go but to the brand directly to get info, and that brand is always going to, they're the best on the market, you know, all of those things.
And you get popped into their sales cycle, you get followed up by our BDMs, which we were and are BDMs.
Yeah, we know how it works.
We know we've done it.
And it's the same people at the conferences. Like, it's going to be, you know, the same that you look everywhere, but there's a lot more out there.
Yeah, and it's really kind of, it's come to that point where we're like, okay, well, we know that just generally individuals are interacting in a retail space differently moving forward. We're not, you know, the Myers are closing down because we're not having everyone come in store anymore. We're not at all trying to play the fact that people aren't going in clinic and salon. They are absolutely going there. But as we spoke about before, the change in the retail space is significant, because we are going online more and more in every aspect. So I think that, like, when I thought like that, I was thinking, okay, well, we've got brands that are selling online, that's fine, and we've got a lot of B2C options. Where's the B2B option, where we have a clinic owner that can actually go online and research and filter-based research, which is really important, like look at comparisons between different brands. You know, we don't have a directory like that at the moment. And then furthermore, we don't have anything where they can just continually order multiple brands together, like, say, restocking all of their consumables, restocking their cosmeceuticals, all of that. You've got four or five tabs open in your restocking on your restocking or your inventory days of, you know, going to each individual brand. So I think that looking at the change in the way that we're interacting online and in our purchasing world, and then also the way that we research kind of came into play when I brought this idea to you.
And one of the big things was exactly that. Jess, I have a little room at home, and Jess said, where did you get that from? Or where did you get that from? And I went through all these different stores and websites, and she said, why is this not in the one place? And that's obviously where it kind of evolved from. But on top of that, giving back to business owners is time. They don't have time. No one has time to allocate an hour every day to jump on or order gloves or order whatever you need to do. If you do it at the one location with one checkout, it is done. So you can get back to doing what you're good at and what you should be doing, what you love, which is being with your clients and running a business.
And not only that, but the amount of people that lose their passwords and they've got all these different platforms, and then one's through an Excel spreadsheet, another thing's through an email, another thing's through a login, another thing's through a portal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, that's me. I lose my passwords at all times. Yeah, so you're always... You know, and we've spoken to brands that are coming on HOA, which is the first time they're actually putting their ordering process online.
Yeah, yeah.
So that just tells you that, you know, that we do have sometimes archaic ways in the beauty industry, on the business acumen side of things, on the actual processing and the admin. And that's purely because what do we focus on? We focus on the things that really matter to us, which is getting results for our clients, and that's amazing. But we also need to advance in other ways that can mean that we free up time.
Yeah.
You know, and time is money for this industry. So
we mentioned before about how the wholesale industry isn't really a level playing field. So how does Home of Aesthetics ensure a level playing field for all brands, especially emerging ones in the beauty industry?
That was one thing that we were absolutely set on, Jess and I, from the minute this idea was conceived. We want it to be a directory, a marketplace where everyone has an opportunity, every brand has an opportunity. And we've even had brands that we've spoken with and, you know, they've said, can we be highlighted? Can we be on the banner? Can we have promotions that pop up every month. No, I'm so sorry, but you cannot.
You cannot because, pay more to hold a higher can't. Place.
Because that defeats the purpose. This is a platform where our business owners have the opportunity to search what is important to them. So we can't have the big names popping up and being front of mind all the time, because it's not fair. So when it comes to the smaller brands against the bigger brands, they are on the platform exactly the same, next to each other, with all their information, all their photos, all their product, with absolutely everything that they want to display and have under their profile. And that's how it's an even playing field. There's opportunities for promotions for all of the brands if they wanted to put that forward, and we will obviously approve that based on, you know, how often they're doing this and what their promotion is. But yeah, it's an absolutely even playing field, and that's very, very important to us at HOA. We want to keep it that way.
Amazing. Can you discuss the importance of a comprehensive B2B platform like Home of Aesthetics in fostering especially industry growth and collaboration?
Sorry, I just got to let her dog out.
That's okay. I was now that we've just had a segue, I'll just make this time point. You need to go in a minute. Do you, Soph?
I've got time. That's fine.
You've got time? Okay. Because I've just got three more questions and I was like, oh, I just want to check. Okay.
I will smash it out and then I'll go.
Sorry. Okay. I've just skipped a question because I'm like, we're taking time. So let's start. So I forget what the segue is, so I'm just going to go straight into the question. Can you discuss the importance of a comprehensive B2B platform like Home of Aesthetics in fostering industry growth and collaboration?
Yes, good question. Really good question.
Yeah, collaboration's a big one, actually. On our platform in particular, we will have the opportunity where brands, one, could put forward other brands that they think would be a perfect fit for us with HOA, but there's also the ability of those brands to work alongside other brands that will complement each other, and from there we can put packages together. So we're not necessarily promoting one brand at a time. For example, we might have a beautiful skincare line that would work incredibly well with an internal supplements brand. So we've got the ability to do collaborations on HOA to cross-promote essentially as well, which is a really good one, and obviously bringing more awareness to brands that obviously may not have their name out there like some of the big guys. So the collaboration is quite big. We've also, from a business point of view, HOA has partnered with some amazing industry bodies like ABIC, and we all know ABIC, we all love ABIC, and we're incredibly excited to be a part of the journey of what they're doing. So there's
the growth for the industry is huge.
Yeah.
Because when we think about it, we don't have anything like this in the industry at the moment. So this potentially has the ability to change the way that we are currently operating as an industry.
Yeah.
Like, it is absolutely ever encompassing, because, you know, having a comprehensive directory or catalog of every single service that you could possibly need and every single product and device, for example, to start up your own beauty clinic or your own, you know,
space
all in one location. It just means that it takes the guesswork out of it. It means that you are always informed and enabled, and that's just going to propel the industry forward.
Amazing. And it's so accessible for brands as well. It's
And on that as well, actually, we also have the ability, we haven't launched it, it won't be launching with the actual launch, but we have a lot in the background of packages and offers that will even simplify that process further in the sense of new business owners and bringing through suppliers. So for example, if they're focusing on waxing, they've got waxing packages and whatnot. So there's more that we're working on the background to simplify this process for these business owners even further.
Amazing. So tell me some of the unique challenges and opportunities that you've encountered while building this first of its kind wholesale marketplace over the last 12 months.
Well, I mean, yeah, what?
How much time have you got?
We tried to look at building our own marketplace.
For a mere moment.
And I remember saying, so,
we can't do this.
I can't do this. Like, this is actually impossible for me to even hope to do. You know, because, you know, we're all like become, you know, quite a bona fide expert of like Shopify or something. But no, it does not create marketplaces, everyone. Don't even try.
No.
Call Menina. Which is eventually what we did.
It's literally what we did. Jess just said, do you know Menina? And I said, no, but I love her already. Get her to do it. Because we can't. So there's been some,
you said the same thing about Earl.
Yes.
It's a joke.
Dude, okay, I'll lose it.
We've done an Earl.
Liz, yes. I'm not going to be able to come back now.
Challenges well and truly have been there. We've progressed down the line a little bit here, but I think that one of the biggest challenges at the moment that we're in currently is actually making sure people understand what this is.
Yeah.
So we're not an existing distributor and we're not drop shipping your products clients, so we're not a B2C platform. It is a very, you know, it is a complete wholesale destination to which we represent your brand for you to sell, essentially.
And we, on top of that, sorry to cut you off, we do want to make it known that our members or our the customers that will be on the platform, we're calling them members, they are business owners. They have ABNs. They're within the industry. This isn't a platform that, you know, Bob next door can jump on and order some candles. These are business owners. So I know a few brands have had that conversation with me saying, well, I don't want my brand just to go to anyone. That's where we're...
They can purchase it wholesale.
So we're very strict with that. We're very strict with that. These are business owners within the industry that have eyes on these brands and just encouraging complete brand awareness and opportunities for business growth that they may not have had previously. Mm. So it's we're the middle guy, I guess. We're creating that link between the brands, so the brands and the members, but we're not holding stock or anything. So obviously when a member places an order through us, it goes back to that brand and becomes a stockist for that brand. So we need to make that nice and clear because we don't want to be just a wholesaling platform. We're much, much more than that and much more involved. It's very layered with what we're doing. Just to kind of simplify it, I guess.
So that would be one of the existing challenges that we're in.
Yeah, totally. And just for, I guess, people that are listening, some things that stand out to my mind just based on so many conversations we've had over the last 6 months of building this platform as well is things like making sure that the brands still have a sense of control of who is coming on board as a stockist.
Yeah.
So there's still that ability to ensure that there's minimum opening orders or making sure that they have terms and conditions that are specific to the brand. So those things you guys have really considered, which is hats off to you because there's a lot of moving parts in this. So I think that's, some really important points as well that you have considered what's best, not just for the member, because sometimes people are all about like the customer. You've also considered what's going to be good for the brand. How are we also improving the brand's experience? And that is being able to harvest these potentially long-term stockists.
You have to look at it as a two-pronged approach because there's two avenues here. And our brands are as important as members and vice versa. And a lot of brands have completely different business models to the one that might be on the profile next to them. So we need to consider what it looks like for them to bring a stockist through versus, you know, the brand next door. So we need to be, one, open to work within the different business models of those brands. And we'll absolutely do that. So, we just want to make it as easy and seamless as possible for that connection.
Amazing. And looking forward, what are your visions and goals for the home of aesthetics? How do you see it shaping the industry?
Well, I mean, again, big question. And we want to shape it like we just all of the things that we want for the industry and for home of aesthetics and for, you know, for everyone that's involved here. One thing to note is beyond the future is that, you know, Sophie and I, we're two industry people.
Mm-hmm.
We have started this based on industry experience, based on what we believe we would love as business owners, as, you know, people working in clinic and salon or as a brand. You know, I think that having two people behind this is also something that's really, really important for the future, because we are in this industry. We are this industry, like everyone that could be listening now. You know, we're in it just like you are, and we've got our ears to the ground always. So the way that we will shape this in the future is basically with everyone that's listening. They are part of this journey with us.
They're guiding us, really. We'll launch this, but every bit of feedback is going to be listened to be valued and actioned, because this will not be successful without our brands and without our members. Mm-hmm. And so we need, they're everything.
They're
really
literally everything. And they're always going to be part of our, you know, our vision and our goal is making sure that we are adapting with the people in this industry to give them what they are after, and how to interact within Home of Aesthetics will be exactly by the feedback that they are giving us.
Mm.
But in terms of like the overall visions, I think that like one thing about this, which I don't think we mentioned too much of, is not only is this enabling, you know, the clinic owners to get time and, you know, space back in their days, in their sort of their researching and their purchasing power, it's also giving, you know, brands such a unique opportunity and reach to be able to, you know, gain new stockists. But we're also really wanting to nurture this entrepreneurial spirit that we all potentially have in this industry, which is, you know, the aspiring people that are coming in with amazing new formulations for, you know, a product that they want to get out there, or an amazing service like yours, Menina, where we can actually, where, you know, they don't necessarily, like a lot of these, particularly the new entrepreneurs that are coming in with products per se, there isn't a lot of space for them to go. Like the only place that they can really go to is their social media aspect. So as part of our vision, I would absolutely love to be able to really build up this entrepreneurial spirit and have a place for them to be seen and heard, and some place for them to go as well. So I really like the aspect of building that aspect of the industry.
I love that. Like I got goosebumps thinking about that, because it is so exciting being part of that and seeing business owners grow and being excited for other businesses developing things and being cheerleaders to each other. And yeah, what an amazing opportunity that you've been able to create, or that you are creating for that.
Yeah, definitely. And then of course beyond that, you know, becoming the household name, the go-to place for the industry to look at brands and see what's up and coming.
Like
and
Google for our industry.
See
Australia and beyond.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thanks so much for both joining today and sharing more about HOA and your really invaluable insights about the changing retail and wholesale space in Australia. So great to have you.
Thank you for having us. We're so excited for today. Obviously, we love you, and we're happy to jump on and be part of this. Very excited.
Awesome. Well, that wraps up another episode. Thank you so much for joining us this week. It was wonderful to have you here again. We will be launching another podcast episode next week, so be sure to tune in. And although it's lovely to listen and learn from podcasts, and I know it's easy just to consume and learn and learn and learn, but at one point, the integration and adding what you have learned into your life is really important too. So if you've got some takeaways from this episode, I would love for you to share them with us and perhaps others on social media, because you never know, it might help their business or their professional and personal development grow as well. So make sure you tag any key takeaways from this episode at dermhealth.co and digitalhealth.co. I'll see you again next week. Bye.